If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Stellar Science, fact and fiction. From science fiction to science fact.
That's the fact, Jack!
And everything theoretical. The space conversation you don't want to miss. With John Landecker as the captain.
I'm the captain.
Rod Pyle as the chief science officer.
Will you call me science officer?
Science officer.
And Jack Heinrich as the producer.
The supervising producing was the best I've ever seen.
This is Stellar Science.
Yeah. Say, how are we feeling, Rod?
Yo, my OG home slice. Hey, I want to thank you. I was listening to your previous hour, and when you were going through all that Gen Z speak, you made me feel very young.
Oh, good. You sound like you still have a little bit of a thing going on.
So this is weird. You know, I was at this conference in Orlando where, of course, if you ask anybody, there's no such thing as COVID.
Right.
And so we had about 1,000 people in our group, and then there was another, I think, 1,500 high school girls volleyball tournament people and their mothers. So, you know, the elevators are jammed and the halls are crowded and people are screaming and yelling and kicking volleyballs around and stuff. And I thought, oh, look, it's a super spreader event. But I thought I was kidding. So I think about 20 people got it. And it's much gentler than, at least for me, it's been much gentler than the last time around. But it just kind of hangs on, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. But you're sufficiently ready to do this?
I didn't want
you to come on and...
No, I won't I promise.
I know that you said, oh, I can do it, I can do it. And I'm like, no, he's not coming on if he's got COVID. Come on.
You know, thank you.
We'll just do it next week.
Sorry about the schedule shift.
No.
But, you know, if I get it again, I mean, this is my, I think, fourth time.
Really?
So I'm getting to be an old hand, you know. Then I'll drop this. But
please
so
do.
I call Kaiser, my healthcare provider. Uh-huh. And they say, oh, yeah, get Paxlovid. And I said, okay. And they said, where are you? I said, Florida. And they went, oh, we don't do Florida. Do you know how much it costs to buy a single application of Paxlovid?
Where it is available?
Well, yeah. $1,600.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That's not right.
I said, no, never mind.
Wait a minute. I've purchased that. It wasn't even anything. That's insane. I mean,
I think it might be because the national emergency was considered over, and so the price went up to big pharma retail. Mm. But yeah, I checked two sources, and they're like, "Yeah, $1,600," and they said it with a straight face. It's like, how can you say my first car didn't cost that much? How can you say that with a straight face? But hey, we're here to talk about science and science fiction, right?
Right, and Stellar and WALL-E are the two.
Yeah.
Tonight, and before we get going, I want to get going on Stellar, but we got to do this.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end, no dark is right. Because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
You know, that happens twice in Interstellar.
Yeah.
And I
wish I could do anything as well as Michael Caine reads that.
Yeah, really.
I mean,
but wow. What is your interpretation of a poem that's that old being in a film of the future? I mean, it's in there twice. Well, so you know, that's not a mistake. There's something going on.
Clearly the writer director team thought it had some important relevance. So you, my good friend, are the only person in the world that could make me watch this movie again. I had seen it when it came out.
And you didn't like it, huh?
Thought I'd rather be dragged over 10 miles.
Really? Road. No kidding.
I just didn't go for it. So to answer the question about that poem, like a lot of it felt a little ponderous, a little heavy-handed, the score, the script, insertions like that. And I kind of feel like I was watching a 4-hour movie that got cut down to 2.5 because you're, you know, I appreciate a movie like 2001: A Space Odyssey that makes the audience think.
Right.
But when it makes the audience sit there and scratch their head and say, wait, NASA's a secret underground thing, huh? And the public was told it was all fake because why? And where the hell did the Saturn V come from? And you can't launch that out of a tube. And love overcomes gravity. And it just went on and on. And so I felt like I needed a set of cliff notes to keep up with the script, even in the second viewing. And in case I haven't said it before a few dozen times, I can't stand Matthew McConaughey. But
Oh, I forgot about that part. Yeah. So this, what we need is like Interstellar for Dummies. Remember those books?
What's that?
What we need? But I don't know. I like it quite a bit.
Do you?
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure I understand it though. But that doesn't get in the way of me wondering about it. I mean, there's a lot of things in there. Like it's not about science. It's about what we don't know. World is running out of food. They're replacing books with corrected texts in the schools, which I'm like, whoever thought of that?
There was some rather forward-looking stuff.
Yes, indeed.
There. And of course, as we all know, climate change no longer exists.
Exactly. So I don't know what they were thinking of with all that
everything
dust.
With NOAA and everything, NASA being shut down and the funding being cut in half.
Yeah.
If it's not, you know, if there's no data, then it's not there. So
of course not.
Yeah, I thought that was a good reminder.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I had not remembered from the first time that I had watched it, because I guess I never thought anybody would do that.
Nervous laughter from the radio host. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and continue. Hello, with Rod Pyle. We're doing Interstellar and WALL-E on 720 WGN. Get out there and save the world. Just a brief clip from the film Interstellar. John Landecker along with Rod Pyle from Ad Astra Magazine talking about Interstellar and later WALL-E. Kip Thorne, a theoretical physicist and Nobel laureate, apparently served as scientific consultant and executive producer on Interstellar. Does that impress you at all or no? Rod? Did we lose Rod? Are you there, Rod?
I'm here.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Okay.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I did. So as it turned out, I was working at Caltech then. I think when the film came out, actually, or shortly thereafter. So we had an event where a few of us got invited to sit and chat with Kip Thorne and Stephen Hawking.
And
you didn't really chat with Hawking, you know, we kind of looked at each other.
Of course.
So that was a little uncomfortable, but Thorne is, you know, a brilliant guy. And I think he gave the film the very best he had. And of course, you know, the effects work in this movie was just superlative. I mean, the black hole, we'd never seen anything like that before. It's a little weird when, you know, it's a little like 1930s pulp science fiction when you just jump in the spaceship and strap it on a go. You push the go button and everything, you know, you joystick it around the black hole. I mean, those kind of trajectories take years to plan and so forth. And interestingly, you know, this whole movie was done a decade before AI was even really a thing, at least as we understand it now.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very forward-looking in both these films. But yeah, I thought Thorne gave him some really good advice. The score was beautiful, a little ponderous, but I mean, deservedly won awards. And as I recall, everything. So when I worked on Star Trek, we were still using physical models, and I left when that stopped, and then tried the whole CGI thing with Battlestar Galactic, and it was okay, but it wasn't the same. Nolan, besides insisting they shoot on 70mm, as I recall, did everything with physical miniatures except for the Saturn V launch. So that, if you saw it in a big theater when it came out, you could tell if you knew what to look for.
Really?
It's not CGI. It didn't have a computer game feel to it. You know, it's like, okay, this stuff looks real. So, you know, all that stuff is great. And I guess, you know, thematically, I mean, have you ever seen a movie that more concisely sort of grabbed the hero's journey and, you know, the guy leaves home, goes through great trials, and comes back transformed. And you're certainly transformed if you're living in a fifth dimensional tesseract or whatever happens at the
Whatever
end.
that's called, yeah.
And that, you know, visualizing that, I mean, that whole thing I thought was a knockout
Well, you know,
when you realize,
there's this part too about how the relationship between the time you spend in space and what that translates at the same time on Earth. Like they eventually were gone for what, 50 some years
At
in
least, I think it was close to 70, because
okay,
what was it? Every minute on the planet
Was 7 hours or
seven
something?
hours on Earth. Yeah,
Something like that. Is that a real
spooky.
thing?
Yeah, in
No
theory.
kidding.
I mean, that's the thing. You know, all this is theory, and it's based on, I mean, I'm not a physicist, as you can tell, but it's based on sound scientific detective work. But the thing I didn't get is, we have to get the data from inside the black hole to solve the gravity problem on Earth so that we can get out of here. And that was a little bit of a head scratcher.
Well,
Does that
there's
make more
more.
sense to you?
No, and then there's more head scratchers on the way. I mean, like,
Bring them on.
I was faking it all along. Yeah, there's that part. What? We've wasted all this time on this movie, and they're doing all this stuff, and you were lying about all of this? Come on.
Yeah, you know, so for one thing, for the first half of the movie, you're being foreshadowed to death. And I thought the whole ghost thing was very clever, but it's like, okay, enough, enough. You're front loading this to the
Yeah.
point that I could barely remember what happened in the first act. And I'm waiting for it to come around and explain itself. But then, yeah, there's a lot of complication there. I get, call me a lazy viewer, you know, a movie like Wall-E, to me, had the same level of heart and feeling, the same big message about love and everything else, but I could sit and enjoy it and think some, as opposed to at the end of it, you know, having a splitting headache and thinking, okay, I must be really stupid because I think I got about half of that.
Yeah, well, I
But
feel the same. No, go
I do
ahead.
suspect there was some heavy editing going on, because I know Nolan likes to shoot long. And I couldn't find much on it online, but there had to be editing because there's just too much that wasn't explained.
Yes. Now, so, okay, what I get from this is, and since it's science fiction, anything goes, so to speak. It starts out with all these things in from the bookcase in that library room or whatever it is, and these ridges, for lack of a better term, form it with sand, I guess, on the
Dust, yeah, on the floor.
dust on the floor, and there's a pattern to it. And then that's sort of like, okay. And then later on, all right, it seems to me that the whole thing comes back and that the Matthew McConaughey character is in on the other side of the bookcase and has been from the beginning.
For years, I guess.
Yes, for years. Is
And a question here. So the dust falling in the patterns, right? Are we to assume that he made that happen? Because we didn't see that per se.
No, you don't see it. In fact, there's no clue that he's behind the bookcase at all until very near the end. And there's that whole thing with the watch that he gave her, and
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
that somehow he communicated. But then I'm thinking to
Well, so
myself, but
he
wait a
was
minute,
doing more.
wasn't he on Earth in the house when those things happened in the beginning? I mean,
Well, I think that's the whole time paradox thing, and that's another thing that gives me headaches in science fiction. You know, you go back and murder your great uncle and blah blah blah. And this wasn't quite that on the nose, but yeah, the whole Morse code with the watch thing I thought was clever, but they kind of implied that his watch and her watch were like exothermically quantum linked or something. So when he did stuff to his, the other one did it, and it's like, well, tell me that. You know, have there's a famous device in film writing called Irving the Explainer, you know, who somehow somebody gets worked in the story and tells you what the hell's going on, like the beginning of Casablanca, you know, refugees will never leave.
Irving the Explainer.
Yeah,
I like that. I hadn't heard of that before.
Well, this is what you get when you spend untold amounts of money going to film school and then never actually directing a movie. But, you know, it just, there was an awful lot of stuff. And can I just say it one more time? I haven't said it tonight, but even though I know it's not true, when you and I grew up, astronauts didn't cry, okay? And he cries again and again, and he's sniffling, and there's snot running everywhere and everything. And it's like, look, I get that that's, you know, thematic to the movie and all that, but come on, John Glenn never cried.
Well, now, John Glenn didn't come back and find out that somebody had left. He had left prior to the mission, had suddenly aged 56, 60 years or whatever it was, and he hadn't. So he's sitting there looking at his daughter, who's bedridden and is, and he's not. I mean, he's still.
Yeah, he's still slimy Matthew McConaughey. And then she looks at him and says, okay, it was good seeing you. Beat it. I got my family here. And he walks out. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but okay.
Yeah.
I guess she thought the same way about him I do.
And you know, in the sci-fi world, maybe there's no correct etiquette for an occurrence of that nature.
Well, that's a very good point.
Where your father suddenly appears as he was 70 years ago and walks through the door. Hey, how's everybody doing? Nice. Or as he would say it, I can't do a Matthew McConaughey, but you know how Matthew McConaughey would say it. Although he doesn't put that on too much in that movie, I don't think.
He didn't mug it up too much. I got to get that. It wasn't like those horrible Lincoln Mercury commercials.
Then he does that on purpose.
Luxury, luxury, luxury. You know,
all right. You know.
I mean, if you waved a match near his hair, it would go up like a torch.
You really do not like him. My goodness.
I hope he's not listening.
Oh, I doubt it. Oh, he's one of my most ardent listeners. No, there's no way. There's no way. I like him.
You might be surprised. Well, that's good. See, so it's a 50-50 split. So we're
right. So I think we probably exhausted everything we have to say.
I should just kind of double back on, I think you're right. You know, the science was as good as it can be for something like this. There's a couple of things, you know, the design of the Ranger, it's not aerodynamic. There's no place to put the gas, that kind of thing. But the big science, you know, the black hole and the event horizon and the physics and all that, there are a couple of things I kind of thought, I got to go back and look at my textbooks, but I think it was really well worked out. And as you point out, you know, when you got Nobel laureate Kip Thorne on your team, you're going to do all right. So I thought that was really very enlightened of them, because as you've seen with movies like Moonfall, gag me with a spoon, the motion picture industry doesn't really like to be inconvenienced by the ideas of scientists saying you can't do that stupid thing you want to do. So I big kudos to Nolan and his team for bringing in somebody who really knew what they were doing.
We're going to do more, but first it's the bottom of the hour and time to get into the WGN newsroom. Oh, it sure is. 720 WGN, John Landecker along with Rod Pyle, talking about this time around, talking about the movie WALL-E, which of course is a 2008 American animated romantic science fiction film. It's described as from Pixar Animation Studios and Walt Disney Pictures. The thing that strikes me about WALL-E and Interstellar is that they both, in their own way, deal with the Earth is about ready to be uninhabitable, right?
Yeah, and they both really focus on love conquers all.
Yeah, but I mean, in WALL-E, he's down on the Earth because there's so much junk everywhere, right? So everybody
towers
else
towers of trash.
Exactly. Yeah.
And by the way, I have to say, I thought it was very inspired of you to select these two, because it never would have occurred to me to put them together.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, thank you. I mean, I see more attempted in-depth analysis of WALL-E than I see of the other movie. Interstellar. I mean, I see people going, consumerism, corporatocracy, nostalgia, waste management, human environmental impact and concerns, obesity, sedentary lifestyles, global catastrophic risk. Then there's some people who read all sorts of religious symbolism into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more conversation because it's a superior film.
Well, maybe. That's true.
I just had to say that.
Well, no, if you have somebody, you know, quote unquote, Wally, a.k.a. Adam, in the Garden of Garbage, a.k.a. Garden of Eden, and Eve, robot, you know, comes down and, you know, falls in love, and there you go. Right?
What was the apple in this film?
Oh, it was buried under a bunch of garbage. You couldn't see it.
Okay. No. Oh, it was an apple core. Got it.
I don't know. I don't know. And so the earth is just piled up with junk, and Wally is the caretaker of that, I take it. And then up in the sky, people are living not a very healthy life.
No, actually, if you're watching the string of it, they're in another galaxy. They have to wormhole back in hyperdrive. I did think it was fascinating that, I mean, this has been widely hailed as one of the best animated films ever. It's in the National Film Registry and everything. But I hadn't realized till I was doing some background reading, sounds like you did too, that the creators of the film knew that they had a challenge ahead of them because there's no dialogue in the first half of the movie.
Right.
Except for a few little pet phrases. So they spent a year watching every day a Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton film to train themselves on, okay, here's how we communicate without words, but with actions and visuals. And I thought, that's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And they came up with this really pleasantly subversive look at consumerism and culture. And like you say, you know, it's kind of a morality play in this, the happiest dystopia we've ever seen, of the wasting of the earth and plundering the resources and placating the masses up in space with simple pleasures. Fred Willard tells them everything is going to be okay. I thought that was an interesting choice.
Right.
And just, you know, human nature of wanting to just, I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I just like to sit back and
who doesn't
read or stare at a screen. Yeah.
Right.
And this was 17 years ago. We get this warning about, you know, people zoning out on tiny screens and letting AI control our lives.
How about it?
Can go wrong.
Yeah.
Boy, was that looking forward or what?
Well, that's the great thing about science fiction, isn't it? I mean, there are certain things that you find in the years after that was the prototype for, so to speak. I mean, even Star Trek had the communicators or whatever they called them, and that sort of turned into everybody's cell phone. So, you know, there are those links that make you go, huh, how about that? They were thinking about that then. I don't know if they envisioned the extent that it is now, but yeah, sitting around, getting fat, watching small screens, not doing anything because you don't have to, really. And meanwhile, Wally's down there on Earth rummaging through garbage, which is really piled up. But
And I guess he sort of represents the single-minded, duty-bound, good soldier. And then here comes Eve, or Eva, as he pronounced it, who was kind of a cross between my ex-wife, a dominatrix, and a sweetheart. You know, I mean, she comes down in this blast of rocket flame, and she's this cold, distant machine that's also very task-driven, but she's not sweet and easygoing like Wally. She's like, get out of my way, or I'm going to blast you into atoms. And then, but, you know, the skill with which they brought they evolved the two characters of these things and brought them together. I mean, there wasn't a moment in Interstellar where I wanted to shed a tear, but in this one, there was a couple of times where I got a little misty-eyed because it's just that sweet and it's done so well. It's not a kid's movie.
Well, no. I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's the perfect movie for kids that adults totally get a lot more out of than the kid, probably.
Yeah, kind of like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
As a kid, there's a lot of stuff we didn't get in those.
Oh, man. Tons. Have you seen a movie that's a few years ago called Idiocracy by any chance?
I did not.
Well, it has a touch of sci-fi to it. It's a comedy, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But part of it is that the Earth has piles and piles and piles of garbage, just higher than high rises, because the humanity has dumbed down so significantly nobody knows what to do with it. I just wondered if you had seen it. It's
no, but I'll check it out.
Well, now wait a minute. I want to warn you because some people watch it who I recommended it to, and they went, "Well, that was a waste of a couple of hours." So,
hey, I got COVID. I can waste all the hours I want.
Yeah, and yeah. See if you see any similarities to current day life.
Yeah.
In Idiocracy. Yeah. Where cabinet members of the president are relatives and yeah.
That's more close to home, isn't it? Oh, it's kind of like Don't Look Up.
Man. I mean, but in a, and they're playing it for laughs. Hmm. And they in that movie, they have discounted water for growing crops, and they don't understand why their crops don't grow. But I'm not going to tell you how somebody from the past gets there. And they have made a deal with the giant corporation called Brondo, which is basically Gatorade. And they're spraying their crops with this Brondo stuff. And our hero goes, "What are you doing? Oh, what are you, why are you doing that?" "Because Brondo's got electrolytes." "Yeah, okay, right. But why are you using it?" "Because Brondo has electrolytes."
Right, goes, right, right.
Goes, they go, he goes, "Well, what about water?" And the answer is, "You mean out of the toilet?" It's just like.
Well, and there was some of that in WALL-E too. Yeah. You know, they're surrounded by advertising and propaganda constantly.
Exactly.
And right. These people, you know, look like me before my last diet, sitting in their chairs. And I, you know, I love when they finally stand up, it's like, "Oh, feet. I never knew this." You know,
yeah.
All these different moments. And I have to say, it was a really small thing, and it doesn't really pertain to our conversation per se, but the bit when WALL-E finds the spork and all the garbage and then is looking for a place to put it on the shelf, and right. It's like, "It's not a spoon, it's not a fork, it's not a spoon, it's not a fork, I'll put it in the middle." There's just so many wonderful little touches that really touched my heart. I thought it's obviously a ton of thought and care went into this.
Yeah.
They did, I think I read 125,000 drawn storyboard frames.
Wow.
Which is at least double the usual for a movie like this. So, you know, that's the thing about Pixar. They really, I mean, they get a lot of money to make them, which is helpful, but they really care about what they do. And I've never seen a movie that I would call anything less than good or very good out of that company in the, I don't know, 25 years that they've been around.
Well, you
and
know,
the people they get are top drawer.
Yeah. And not only do they get a $180 million budget for this, we're talking about 2008 money, but it also made $532.5 million in 2008 money. I mean, I've not done the math, but.
Well, I did the math to compare that to Interstellar's, I think, $728 million, and unfortunately, WALL-E still made less. So clearly, a lot of people liked Interstellar quite a bit.
We'll do more with Bob when we come back on 720 WGN.
Your daughter's generation.
Oh, play that one already. Your daughter's generation is the last generation to surprise. To survive on Earth, you're the world's greatest pilot. Now go out there and save the world. All right, see you later. All right, all right, all right. 720 WGN, John Landecker at 848 with Rod Pyle at Astro Magazine. You know, you said earlier you enjoyed my pairing of these two films. Well, what would you like to pair? He said, throwing it back in your lap.
We've done a few of them, but I at one point Brandon and I worked up a worksheet that I'm having trouble finding, and I think Ashley was having trouble too. But I'll get you some more.
Oh, okay, all right.
I know. I was thinking if we really wanted to punish ourselves, we could do the first Star Wars and the original Star Trek movie, which is two and a half hours.
You mean Star Trek, the movie?
Star Trek, the motion picture.
The motion picture, rather.
Feature.
I'm ready to do that.
Okay.
Sure. The first Star Wars and Star Trek, the motion picture.
And boy, have you been following the press about, so they re-released, I guess, the original print of Star Wars in theaters, and people are just saying it looks awful.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think it's a limited release thing, but I think people have forgotten, you know, what special effects were like in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
I mean, wires and the laser beams were drawn in by hand and stuff like that. And, I mean, you know, not scraped on the film, but they were still done artistically as opposed to CGI. And, yeah, it looks a little funky. And when they're shooting all those energy weapons, the bolts go in all kinds of different directions that don't, you know, just the physics of it are weird. So people look at it now and go, well, that doesn't look right. Well, you've been spoiled.
you know, that's the one thing maybe it's just me, but that's the one thing I say about 2001 Space Odyssey. Not that. Oh, I say the exact opposite. I mean, those special effects still look fresh, so to speak.
I saw it, I think, 10 or 15 years ago in a theater, which I hadn't seen. I mean, I think I saw it 22 times as a kid because I just couldn't get enough. I usually left before the ending, though, because that also made my head hurt. But, you know, the whole eating the poached egg funky stuff going down to Jupiter. But the first half of the movie, those visual effects were as close to perfect as anything I've ever seen to this day.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Man.
Which is really amazing.
Kind of a weird director, because it's pretty clear, a lot like if you read much Isaac Asimov, neither of them like people very much in my estimation, because their films are kind of like dry ice cold when it comes to, you know, human emotions and so forth. But boy, visually, 2001, yeah, you're right on.
Well, talk about dry ice emotion. It doesn't get drier or icier than hell. I mean, he's got to, you know, hell starts running the show. Open the pod doors or whatever the term is, and you know, you can't get more non-human than Hal, so to speak.
And it's interesting because, you know, that's a big moment, right, where he won't let the astronaut back in, and when he snips the air hose on the other guy. But what they kind of underplayed was when he kills the remainder of the crew in cryosleep.
Right.
And we see all those life sign indicators go flat. And it's like they played that moment really kind of low key, but you're thinking, hey, he just murdered the crew.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal.
You must have seen Passengers, right? No. Yes.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Uh-oh. I got a negative vibe off of that.
So was it Ryan Gosling? No, who was the guy?
No, it's not. It's, come on. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And
so he sits there and alone, you know, because of the accidental thing, and he's lusting after this girl in this tube. I mean, it's kind of creeperish, isn't it?
Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah. You know, they're all in their stasis, and they're supposed to be going thousands and thousands of years or whatever it is. And for some
light years,
glitch, his pod opens up and he's out and he's alone. And then after a while, he throws the switch on Jennifer Lawrence's pod and she comes out. And if I remember correctly, they're okay for a while until she finds out what he's done.
Right.
And then eventually they're okay again, but still.
Yeah. And there was some really cool stuff in it. I mean, the bar is fantastic, and you know, the effects are good. So I interviewed the visual effects guy on that movie about the spaceship design. Yeah.
Yeah.
An article. And he said, you know, a really nice guy, and he's done some great work. And he said, we printed out every spaceship design we could find from like 1900 on. They had like two production rooms where they just papered the walls of this stuff. He said, we just couldn't find something we liked. We knew it had to have, you know, artificial gravity through a spinning structure and all that.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, he said, I was in my San Francisco condo and I saw a sycamore pod pop open and fall from a tree. And then I knew I had it. And that's where that whole pointy, you know, spinning claw in space thing came from. And I thought the one thing in that movie that really let me down was the design of that ship, because it was ridiculous. I mean, really, well, you know, you're not moving through air. There's no reason for anything to be streamlined or pointed. So if you saw The Expanse, you pretty much know what artificial gravity is going to look like because they were very smart about it in that film, in that show. And then here comes Passengers with this weird spinning claw thing. And it's like, what are you doing?
Well, you see, you have a more than educated eye. I mean, for me, you know, the average movie goer, I didn't have any concern about it whatsoever. I was.
Did
like,
you like the movie overall?
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah. I like Jennifer Lawrence a lot.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Yeah, and no, I did like it. I thought it was a unique plot, so to speak. And I wondered, you know, it sort of asks the question, I think, somewhat, if you were in that position, what would you do? You know what I mean? Would you be willing to stay by yourself for, I mean, we're talking centuries, right? Well, you're not going to live for centuries, but, you know, for 70 years.
Trip, no matter what.
Yeah.
But because of my poor self-image, I probably wouldn't thaw out the hottest woman on the ship. I realize.
Well, you know what? She's not going to have much choice once she thaws out, so you might as well go for it, he said as a sexist.
That's true, because there isn't much competition, is there?
No,
there's you and the bartender whose body stops at his navel. So I guess.
So it's this
okay, we could go down a really bad path here.
Yeah, here. We probably shouldn't. Yeah.
But, and in reading about Interstellar, a movie called Sunshine came up a number of times, which I've never seen. Have you?
Sunshine? A sci-fi movie?
Yeah, apparently it was sort of similar in overall theme. And
I don't think I've ever heard of it, but I'm writing it down right now. How old is it? Do you know how old the movie is?
Sometime in the 2000s, I think.
Sunshine. Okay.
Sunshine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always enjoy
the list.
Always enjoy the possibility of seeing some new sci-fi that's halfway decent.
And did your wife find something that she wanted to read finally?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but
okay.
She plows through them. So I think she's got like 3 or 4 books going at the same time. I don't know.
She's one of those Evelyn Wood speed readers where she just
No. It's she's just an avid reader. And
that's great.
And I'm not. So, you know, that's why I liked the classic comics so much when I was growing up. Sure. Look at this picture.
That's why you're great on radio, because you're a communicator, not just a consumer.
Ah, I see. Say, if we want to get this magazine you got there, Ad Astra, what do we got to do?
You can either go to adastramagazine.com, thanks for asking, or you can go to the National Space Society, NSS.org, online, and it comes with the membership. And you can always check out my podcast at This Week in Space.
This Week in Space.
Yeah.
How often do you do that?
Every Friday.
Obviously this week, John, you idiot.
Yeah. Every Friday posts about 7 o'clock your time, I think.
Yeah, we do it once a month, and we call it This Week in Space.
Well, that would be kind of funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but not good. Yeah. All right. Well, then we shall reconvene again in the future and be doing the first Star Wars film and the first Star and Star Trek, the motion picture. Looking forward to it. All right.
All right. Me too.
All right. There he goes. Rudd Pyle.